Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome, America. We're going to be talking today about abstinence-based sex education and why so many people hate it. It's part of a bigger picture in which people want to take control of the sex education of our children. And the battle of worldviews here is really not over whether there should be such a thing as sex education, but over what kind of approach should be taken. And there are some who believe that sex education, they won't put it this way. They're not going to tell you this, at least rarely will you hear this right up front. But what they really want to teach children is how to have sex. And they will say how to do so healthfully and safely. They're against abstinence-based sex education because they're against abstinence. They won't say that. But, of course, what they want to do is send a very mixed message at best to teenagers in which they want to say, don't have sex, but since you're going to anyway, here's how to do it effectively, safely, and you can fill in the blanks from there. We're going to be talking about that beginning in the second segment. First, a review of the news. Of course, the big news out of Canada is the Supreme Court of that country, which has come back once again to address the gay marriage issue. And in this case, the Canadian Supreme Court simply refused to define marriage for the country, but made very clear that it would not stand in the way of the Canadian Parliament legalizing same-sex marriage. And as it happens right now, the Liberal government of that nation to our north of Canada is looking for the prospect, having made the pledge that they would push for same-sex marriage. The gay marriage law that is proposed to the Canadian Parliament needs the backing of at least 155 legislators in the 308-seat House of Commons. It currently has the backing of the 38 Liberal cabinet members and is believed to be supported by nearly all the legislators in two other parties, one party based in Quebec, and also the New Democrat Party. And together they have about 73 seats. And so you're talking about the need for another 20 to 25 seats in order to get this bill through. It's going to have to come from someplace. And that's where Citizens of Canada really have an opportunity to try to make an impact here. This still could be defeated. And so as was reported yesterday, it appeared that the Supreme Court of Canada had legalized same-sex marriage. It turns out that's not exactly what happened. Instead, they refused not to legalize it and refused to enter into it and told the Parliament they would basically get out of the way for the legislator to decide whatever it wanted to on the basis of marriage. Folks, the whole question, of course, of whether we have any standards in the church comes up again and again, but never more graphically in terms of our contemporary experience than with the Anglican crisis over the issue of the consecration of an openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church USA. Now, just a few weeks ago, we looked at this Windsor report that was put out by a special commission of Anglican leaders, and they were trying to reach some kind of agreement, trying to solve the problem this commission put together at the instigation of the Archbishop of Canterbury. And, when the Windsor report came out, I really was not very impressed. It was very clear to me that this was a way of not doing anything. The report came out and said two things. Number one, using very strong language, it said that the American and Canadian churches connected with the Anglican Communion, in this case it means the Episcopal Church USA and then the Anglican Church in Canada, had sinned against the Anglican Communion, and I would go beyond that, against the body of Christ and against the Word of God, in the American case, by consecrating an openly gay man as bishop, and in both the United States and Canada, in developing rights for the blessing of same-sex unions. And yet, the Windsor Report also castigated conservatives for making too much fuss over it. Now, in the Church of England newspaper today, there is a statement out by the Irish primate, Archbishop Robin Eames, and he happened to be, coincidentally, chairman of the committee that brought the Windsor Report. He said that the American church is, quote, never likely to face discipline. In other words, it was all words, sound and fury signifying nothing. There are no teeth in this report. Archbishop Eames, he's the primate of Ireland, said, quote, I think we need to move on in terms of what we've learned from this. I'm a great believer in trying to learn the lessons of these things. I think we must move on. Well, move on, Mr. Archbishop, Mr. Primate of Ireland. What are you going to move on to? You're going to move on with a church that has decided to do nothing punitively, nothing correctively against an American church that has consecrated an openly gay bishop, and whose leader now, Bishop Frank T. Griswold, has said that so far as he's concerned, the church is going to continue in that direction. So this is anarchy. And I agree for my conservative evangelical friends in the Anglican and Episcopal churches, because what you have here is an in-your-face insult to the Word of God, to the tradition of the church, to the understanding of Christian morality the church has known for 20 centuries, and to their call for correction and for humility and for repentance on the part of the church. Another report coming out of London just reminds us of what we're up against in the culture war. Terence McNally's play Corpus Christi is creating quite a stir at St. Andrews University, and is going all the way down in terms of controversy from Scotland to London. All of Great Britain, the United Kingdom, seems to be very, very concerned about this. In case you aren't aware of it, Corpus Christi is a play by an openly gay playwright which presents Jesus and his disciples as sexually active homosexuals. Does that offend you? Well, it ought to offend anyone who cares about the faith, who cares about the Lord Jesus Christ here being presented in this way. Christians and others in Great Britain and Scotland are creating an uproar, but the play is going on, and you can imagine the kind of debate that's coming. It's the freedom of speech, the freedom of the artist, and all the rest. But here's the big question. What if, indeed, this play presented an openly gay Muhammad? Or an openly gay Buddha? Or an openly gay Moses, or anything like that? It would be anti-Semitic. In the one case, it would be anti-Muslim, Islamophobic. That's the term they're using. Or it would be, Buddhist-phobic or anti-Buddhist. In any event, you couldn't do this about anyone other than Christ and get away with it. But, of course, now it's art. It's politically protected speech. When this movie first debuted in the United States of America, it was to great controversy here. That controversy now in England. Interesting developments out of England on the philosophy front. One of the world's most famous atheists now says he believes in God. Now, I've seen this kind of rumor go round and round, and even in the pre-internet age, you would see this kind of thing from time to time. But the report is out now that Anthony Flew, a British philosophy professor who has been on the front lines of arguing for atheism and against belief in God, is now saying that he is a believer of some sort. So in checking this out, it is now clearly documented. As a matter of fact, a lengthy interview with Anthony Flew is going to be published in the upcoming issue of Philosophia Christi. That's the journal of the Evangelical Philosophical Society. And this is an interview between Dr. Gary R. Habermas of Liberty University and Anthony Flew. But here's the interesting thing. Mr. Flew is now saying that he believes in God, and he's saying he did so or does so because of the evidence. He said he simply cannot explain the universe without some kind of intelligent designer. And yet, when he says he believes in God, he's not talking about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the father of our Lord Jesus Christ. He says, and I'm quoting from this interview soon to be published, well, I don't believe in the God of any revelatory system. He says instead he believes in an Aristotelian God who has the characteristics of power and also intelligence. Now, what's the take-home value out of all of this? It is that this is a man whose intellectual honesty and integrity, at least at this point, has led him to say, listen, I was an atheist, I argued for atheism, I argued against the coherence of belief in God, but now I have to admit that given what we know about the universe, and it's interesting that Mr. Flew cites evidence from, a study from outer space, from cosmology and geology about the nature of the world and the nature of life, he comes back to say, given the evidence, I cannot believe that all this was merely an accident. Now, before we celebrate this too much, let's realize that he doesn't believe in the deity of Christ. He has not accepted the Christian gospel and doesn't even believe in a personal God in that sense. But you know what? If he's moved this far, I think he just might move a bit further. I hope he lives long enough to find his way all the way home. But it is a reminder to us that those who make the case against belief in God generally do so with one hand behind their backs and fingers crossed. The evidence is simply overwhelming. They have to believe that everything as we know it is simply an accident. And that claim just became too much for the intellectual integrity of Anthony Flew. And we ought to congratulate him for having the courage to come out and say, after so many years and decades of atheism, I was wrong. Folks, we've been tracking so many of these issues because day by day, the headlines, the news stories in the electronic media tell us what's going on in the world, and what's going on in the world is important to thinking Christians. Because we are in this world, we are facing the same issues, we are reading the same papers, and our children are being taught They're being taught in school, yes, and wherever you have your kids, you can count on the fact they're being taught, and you ought to be accountable for who's doing the teaching. But they're also being taught by the media. They're being taught by the figures of popular culture. They're being taught by sports stars. And they're being taught about sex. The liberals hate abstinence-based sex education. They want control of the sex education process. They want to define the terms. They want to develop the content. And they want to shape the psychological, moral, and social worldviews of our children. And they don't want them to be told not to have sex. We're going to talk about why that's important and what you can do about it when we come back. This is the Albert Mueller Program. If you've been looking at the nation's newspapers and listening to the cable news networks and all the rest, you would think that there has been a devastating congressional investigation into the failures of abstinence-based sex education, but that's nonsense. In this case, what you have is a report out from the office of Representative Henry Waxman of California, in which he basically had some of his own staff members look at 13 different abstinence-based curricula in order to find problems. But as I've read the entire report from beginning to end, I have to tell you, I don't find that many problems, and I certainly don't find anything to justify the kind of headlines across America. The New York Times, study false abstinence courses. CNN.com, abstinence courses flawed. Something's going on here other than science and other than an objective understanding of these things, and it's the worldview war over how our children should be taught about sex. With us on the line right now is Dr. Wade F. Horn, who is Assistant Secretary for Children and Families for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Before he was there, he did great work with the National Fatherhood Initiative. Dr. Horn, I met you first at a Heritage Foundation meeting years ago. I appreciate your work. Welcome to this program.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
As you have, I'm sure, looked at this whole report out of Congressman Waxman's office, you know, what's going on here?
Well, I think what it is those who believe that abstinence education is for some reason evil in this world, reacting to try to attack it. But the fact of the matter is, the one thing that is undeniable is that abstinence is the only 100% effective way to ensure that you don't become a parent out of wedlock or contract a sexually transmitted disease. And that's a fact that Congressman Waxman cannot deny.
Dr. Horn, I want to read to you from an article published in the Los Angeles Times this week. It's by Mary Jane Wagley. She's the CEO of Planned Parenthood of Los Angeles. By the way, we invited her on the program, and she was a little too busy to come on to give an answer for her article here. She said this: imagine a driver's education course in which the teachers show students grisly photos of traffic accidents but never tell them to stop at red lights or buckle their seatbelts. And you've got a pretty good idea of what abstinence-only sex education is like. Abstinence-only programs try to scare and shame teens, teaching only the negative consequences of sexuality without telling young people what they can do to stay safe and healthy. Dr. Horn, that's not even what's revealed in this report.
No, of course not. Look, most objective people, if you look at our broader culture, understand that our young people are bombarded every single day in a myriad of ways with the message that it's perfectly okay to engage in promiscuous sexual activity and expect no negative consequences. The truth, however, is that 14,000 teenagers each and every day, 14,000, contract a sexually transmitted disease. Many of those sexually transmitted diseases are incurable. Some of them will even kill you. And so what we're doing through abstinence education is to try to help our young people make the healthiest choice for themselves. And that choice is abstinence, because we know that if you become a parent as a teenager or if you contract a sexually transmitted disease, your long-term life prospects are significantly and negatively affected. So we're on the side of encouraging a promising and bright future for our young people. Those who say it's impossible for young people to be sexually abstinent, first of all, aren't looking at the data and certainly are giving up on our young people in a way that I don't think they ought to.
Dr. Horn, I think the rise of these abstinence-based programs and the Bush administration's policies in this area, I think we're looking at some real good news there. I have to tell you a word of personal experience. I went to high school in the 1970s. That dates me back there somewhere. And in South Florida, which wasn't exactly a conservative bastion at the time. And I can remember sitting as a 14-year-old high school freshman in a classroom in which I was shown a movie. And I realized in the middle of it, they're teaching us how to have sex. And I remember as a 14-year-old thinking, this is the weirdest thing I've ever had happen in school. Now, a part of what's going on here is a real clash over what sex education should be about, isn't it?
Sure. I mean, there are those who believe that sex education should be about kind of a how-to-do-it manual, and those who believe that what we ought to do is tell our young people the truth, which is that the only sure way to avoid becoming a parent as a teenager or contracting a sexually transmitted disease to be sexually abstinent. So there certainly are two very, very different perspectives here.
Now, I'm sure that now that this report is out from Congressman Waxman's office, and of course is being treated in the media as if Congress itself has adopted this or even a congressional committee, I'm sure the Bush administration must be shaking to its very foundations, and you're reevaluating your whole approach to sex education, right?
Far from it. I mean, this is not going to affect us in any significant way in terms of our commitment to helping young people make the healthiest choice for themselves and continuing to develop strategies to ensure that our young people all have a bright future ahead of them.
Dr. Horn, what would you say to parents right now? Because I think a lot of parents looking at this, they know that they want their kids to get sex education. And by the way, I want to say again and again, our approach is that the parents ought to be the sex educators first and foremost. But we do understand there's anatomy, there's physiology, and given the way the schools are organized, it's going to be addressed. What can parents do to make sure that that it's an abstinence-based program that's being taught in their schools?
Well, first, I do agree with you. I think it's important. I'm a child psychologist. I think it's important for parents to take the initiative to talk with their children as they're growing up about sexuality, about their values around sexuality, their expectations for their children's behavior, and so forth. And when it comes to sex education in the schools, I think it's important for parents to be involved, to go to the school, ask to see the curriculum, talk to the educator who's going to be teaching the curriculum, ask questions of the educator, be involved. And if you find that the curriculum is something that you don't like, that something is not consistent with your personal values, then you ought to have the right to opt your child out of that instruction. And don't wait for the school system to offer a meeting with a sex educator in your school. Don't wait for the school to tell you that it's okay for you to opt your child out. Be proactive. Find out what your school is teaching your children. And if you don't agree with it, if it's not consistent with your values, then insist that your child be opted out.
Dr. Wade F. Horn is Assistant Secretary for Children and Families of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. Horn, you've been very generous on a Friday afternoon to give us your time here. I want to thank you for coming on the program today, and God bless you and your work.
It's my pleasure.
Folks, you've been hearing there from one of the administration's senior officials about this whole issue of sex education, and the Bush administration is very, very clear in its support of abstinence-based sex education, and I want to tell you how that makes a difference. It does so because the administration, through the Department of Health and Human Services, determines what kind of programs are going to get government funding at the local and state level. And I'm very proud of the Bush administration for the fact that it's really holding the line on this abstinence-based approach. Now, that's not to say that other bad things aren't happening in other school districts, but at least in terms of how the federal government is impacting this, and that's huge. Let's face it, that is huge. The Bush administration is very clear about its insistence on this abstinence-based approach, and the left hates it. I mean, hate is hardly even an adequate word here. The left loathes this entire approach because it runs counter to its view of sex, of teenagers, of morality, and all the rest. You know, abstinence is one of those words that they just don't want to hear. And if you think I'm exaggerating, just look at the books written by the people who are making these arguments. It will send you into an absolute fit of concern and outrage over what's going on and being presented to our kids. I want you to join this discussion. America's parents, how do you respond to this report? How do you respond to this issue? And what do you expect for sex education for your children. Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back. I'm Albert Mohler.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
The whole issue of sex education is just filled with controversy. I mean, almost any time it comes up, you can count on having the full PTA meeting. You can count on the school board meeting being well attended. You can count on lots of folks being there with several different worldviews, maybe even many different worldviews. But there is a basic divide between two positions. One understanding of sex education is that the purpose of sex education should be morally as well as scientifically and in a health perspective, anatomy and physiology, to prepare kids to understand sex and to aim for abstinence. And as you heard Dr. Wade F. Horn say, Assistant Secretary for Children and Families in the Health and Human Services Department of the U.S. government, just with us, he said, look, there's only one 100% safe approach to sex, and that's abstinence before marriage. That's it. If you practice abstinence, no venereal diseases, no pregnancy, no HIV in terms of sexual transmission and all the rest. But on the other side, you have those who say, no, sex education shouldn't be about scaring teenagers from having sex because they believe there's fundamentally nothing wrong with teenagers having sex. As a matter of fact, I could show you an entire bibliography of sources where they will argue that teenagers have a right, a human right, a constitutional right to have sex, and parents, as a matter of fact, should simply get out of the way and take their morality with them. That's kind of the argument you have there. And so it's very hard to reconcile these two positions. With us on the line from Cleveland, Ohio, is Al, listening on WHK. Al, welcome to the program.
I'm a Democrat, and I believe that abstinence is necessary.
Good.
You know, to speak in general terms, what you have is, I think, is absolutely preposterous.
Well, I don't see. What are you talking about?
Well, you're saying out to the left, and Democrats believe that, you know, it's okay for teenagers to have sex. I have two, you know, I'm raising two teenagers. And absolutely no, I do not want them to engage without being married in sexual intercourse because of the two main reasons that were discussed by the congressman.
Yeah, well, I think we're in agreement here. I didn't say the Democrats favor this, although I think it'd be interesting to find out if a majority of Democratic leaders would be on one side of the issue or another. I mean, just you can look at some votes. But all I said on this program was that this report came from the office of a Democratic congressman from California. I'm very glad to hear from a Democrat who believes in abstinence-based sex education. God bless you. May your tribe increase and your number grow.
I misunderstood you.
Well, I appreciate your call. And you're from Cleveland, Ohio, and you said you have two kids. And, Al, as I understand you, you're saying that you expect and desire and want your kids to be told not to have sex before marriage, right?
Absolutely. And I am a Democrat. And I guess that's what you said when you said to the left. I don't know. But I don't want them to engage in sex until they are married. Absolutely, that is absolutely correct.
Well, let me just tell you, Al, I know you identify yourself as a liberal. Let me tell you, on this issue, it would not be fair to say you're a liberal. Because the left on this, and I'm not just speaking in terms of Democrat, Republican here, I'm talking about taking a liberal position on sex education. They would consider you way out of date on this. By the way, I think you're way right. And I think most of our listeners would agree with you here. But, you know, that just shows us when we'll use a word like left or liberal, it's a good reminder from you. We need to be very clear what we're talking about. And here I'm talking about those social liberals who want to promote a very different understanding of sex than I think most American parents and certainly Christian parents would expect. Thank you so much for your call, Al. God bless you there in Cleveland, Ohio. You know, this is another reminder to us that you can't take the politics out of this. Because the government is making these decisions, especially about what is taught in terms of mandates, what is funded in terms of budget. And so the war really goes on at two levels in Washington, at the bureaucratic level and at the congressional level. And you could say the overtly political level because it involves the White House, too. But in this case, what you have are some people who are deeply involved in the bureaucracy, and for years they have been putting out different mandates to schools about what they are to cover and how they are to cover it. And in a shift of administration, there could be a huge change in this. And for instance, we just heard from an assistant secretary in the Department of Health and Human Services, and I guarantee it's a different approach than what was in the previous administration. No, it's not just a Democrat-Republican issue, but it is inherently a political issue in that someone's going to make these decisions, and it really does matter who that someone is. I'd love to hear from you on this. I know America's parents are deeply invested in this issue, and here on a Friday afternoon, I'd love to hear from you. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mueller Program. The issue is sex education. Should it be abstinence-based or something very, very different? That's the conflict, and that's the question. We'll be right back with your conversation. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're looking into this question of abstinence-based sex education and why there are so many who hate it. And just in case you have any doubt, you can go to the website of Representative Henry Waxman. That's at www.house.gov. And just put in Waxman. It'll take you right there. And all you have to do is look at the report that's on his website, and you'll find out everything you need to know. When you find out what makes them upset, you'll understand why you should be upset at the report. But I want to know what America's parents think. There's time for you to call and join this discussion. What could be more important than the moral formation of our kids and the kind of sex education they receive? The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to go to Frankie, listening in WFIA-FM in Louisville, Kentucky. Frankie, welcome.
Good morning, afternoon, evening. I don't even know what time it is.
It's various times across the nation, Frankie, and so I'm with you. Sometimes I can't keep it straight either. You just go right ahead.
I feel like more parents should step up in their children's education as far as sex education, because as an early parent myself, I became a parent when I was 14, and that's because no one taught me anything. I feel like more parents need to step up, because when kids are learning things, they're learning it from their friends, and they don't have the education down either. They're picking up little bits and pieces of things from friends, and they're not actually being educated as far as abstinence or what is or isn't safe.
You know, Frankie, you raise a very good point, by the way, and that is that for a lot of kids, the most powerful sex education comes from their peers. And when you think about it, that's pretty frightening to think about kids, first of all, even in terms of whether they know what they're talking about in terms of anatomy and physiology. But then beyond that, you know, what kind of moral worldview is being really presented there? Frankie, you're saying that parents need to take the role here. You know, what are the stakes? In other words, what would you say to parents about why it is that they really have to step up to the plate and take responsibility for the sex education of their children?
Because whether you believe it or not, your kids do listen to you. And if more parents realized that, there would be less of a problem with teenage pregnancy and other issues with children. A lot of parents think it's up to the school system or, you know, obviously someone else to take charge of their children's education.
Frankie, thanks so much for your call. You just sparked an idea that I think we really ought to trace for just a moment, and that is I think a lot of teenagers would really, really appreciate their parents giving them some reasons to say no. You know, that often is a real issue for teenagers. They need some ways to say no. They need some reasons to say no. They need some ammunition for them to say no. And, you know, what they're hearing from the media is just the exact opposite. What they get from their pop stars, you know, what they're getting from the film stars, what they're getting from, in some cases, progressive sex educators in the schools and elsewhere, is why to say yes and how to say yes and when to say yes. And in many ways, I think they're really looking for some encouragement to say no. Great call, Frankie. Appreciate your point. Tim, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I am a Christian. I do believe in abstinence. I'm a father. I believe we need to teach that. I'm afraid that as parents, we sometimes use that as the easy way out, and we don't give them any more tools or information to work with. I'm afraid that we just simply say, well, this is not good. You shouldn't do it. Don't do it. And that was pretty easy to have that conversation with your child. I think they need more information. I think they need the tools to work with, in because let's face it, it's not easy. They could get to a point where they've got to make a really big decision, and they may make the wrong decision. If they do, I think they need the tools to be safe.
Yeah, I want to find out what exactly you're saying there, Tim. Help me with this. But, you know, I certainly agree. You need to say more than no. And you know, I don't think any of us want our children to be you know, locked in ignorance. But help me to understand, if you're saying, are you saying that you would teach your children, for instance, about contraceptives in case they did decide to have sex?
Well, I struggle with that, to be honest with you. I'm not so sure that we shouldn't somehow include that, but more strongly share the fact that abstinence is certainly the way we want them to go.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb here just a little bit and say I think that it's important that teenagers, especially older teenagers, and I would say, you know, high school students and above, certainly need to have an idea of even what sex is like and the facts of reproduction looking forward to marriage. I mean, there are certain things they don't need to know. There are certain things they do need to know. And, you know, it's hard for me to believe that there are actually that many teenagers out there who would be well taught even about anatomy and physiology that wouldn't understand, you know, how contraceptives work and all the rest. But I think when you're talking about sex and you say you're supposed to say no, but if you don't, then use this. I think it's more than a mixed message. I think it's basically saying, look, don't play with matches, but here's a fire extinguisher. So when you do play with matches, at least you can put the fire out. I think our kids need to know we have a moral expectation right up front. You know, I'm not afraid of what my kids learn in terms of information, in terms of facts. You know, as Christians, we shouldn't be ever concerned about the truth. But it's the moral context in which these things are presented. I think that's the big issue. Tim, thanks for your call. We're going to go very quickly to Ryan calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hi there, Dr. Muller. I love your show. I appreciate it. My question is, as an expectant parent, how do you advise your children to instill the proper biblical sexual values in them when you didn't necessarily follow them in your teenage years? You know, for example, when they get to be, you know, 13, 14, 15 years old and they ask you, man, mom and dad, how did you handle these types of things?
You know, I think, Ryan, that is a great question that a lot of parents would like to ask. I saw a book, by the way, that the title fascinated me a few years ago. It was this, How to Get Your Kids to Say No in the 90s When You Said Yes in the 60s. And I think that's where a lot of this is. Of course, that book's a little dated now that we're out of the 90s, but the question is not dated. And, you know, I think there are a couple of things. First of all, think about the early church. What about the first generation of Christians? You know, those parents had to say to those kids, we were involved in all kinds of stuff before we came to know the Lord, before we came under the authority of the Word of God. We were into polytheism. We were into all kinds of perversity. But we can't do that anymore. That's not who we are. And I think one of the things parents can do, even honestly acknowledging that they did not follow the scriptural admonitions in a Christian worldview and a Christian understanding when they were young, I think one thing parents can do is say, look, I want you to learn from my mistakes. I'm going to be honest with you, at least in terms of an acknowledgement of the fact that I did not keep myself pure till marriage. But I want to tell you about the cost of that, and I want to tell you I want better for you, and I expect better of you. And that's a great question, Ryan. You know, we should never be dishonest and hypocritical with our kids. And if we are, they're going to see right through it. But I think we can always be honest about our failures and say, you know, I want better for you. I know better now. And we've got to do better. And we're going to hold each other accountable for that. Ryan, a great question. I think there are a lot of parents out there, especially when you consider how many generations have been so warped already by this kind of progressive sex education. There are a lot of parents asking that kind of question. Let's be sure we give the right answer. Let's be sure the next generation knows better, lives better, understands better. I'll be right back with some final thoughts. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Ladies and gentlemen, when you put the two words, sex and education, together, A plus B equals explosion. Because there's going to be controversy, because someone's going to decide what kind of sex education is taught. Someone is going to put together the curriculum. Someone's going to decide what is and isn't mentioned, is and isn't covered, and is and isn't promoted. And the reality is that if you do not have an abstinence-based sex education program, you have a non-abstinence-based sex education program. How's that for a little exercise in deductive logic? And if it is not an abstinence-based sex education program, then that curriculum is going to be devised in such a way as to tell kids one way or another how to have sex. It can be repackaged as safe sex, repackaged as healthy sex, but it cannot be repackaged in any other way but that they are going to tell kids how to have sex. Now, on the other side, the Bush administration and the proponents of abstinence-based sex education say kids need to be taught what sex is all about, human reproduction, human anatomy. They need to be taught about these things, but they need to be taught in a moral context that says premarital sexual activity is wrong. It shouldn't take place. You should not do this. Now, the great battles between those who want to say to kids, you should not do this until you're married, and those who want to say, well, we kind of rather not that you did it, or you don't do it unless, until you're old enough and, quote, ready for it. Look at how much of the material says that teenagers should not have sex until they are ready. Let me tell you, in the Christian worldview, when ready happens is when you say, I do. It's at marriage. That's when you're ready. Of course, a lot of these programs, they redefine readiness in terms of emotional readiness, in terms of physical readiness. And so much of this is just reduced on the part of the girls to the ability to give consent. You know, a lot of these programs are more concerned about date rape between couples than saying no sex in the first place. We had as our guest today Dr. Wade Horn, Assistant Secretary for Children and Families in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and he made a statement we need to think about again and again, and that is that there's only one 100% effective way to protect kids when it comes to sex, and that's abstinence. When you have abstinence, you don't have these other problems. You don't have these other complications. You don't have these other diseases. You don't have these other contagions. You don't have these other effects. You do not have all the social pathologies and all the emotional wreckage and all the pain. You don't have any of this. Now, what is there about that picture that so many people seem not to understand? Well, that lack of understanding is more than about facts. It's about a picture of the world. It's about an entire system of values and morality. It's about worldview. And we come around to that just about every day because that's where the battle's fought and that's where we address the issues day by day. Next week, we'll be back for five shows, five important conversations. I'll see you then. God bless you.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Mohler's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.